Well, a basic principle of literacy, capital L, literacy, alphabetic literacy, is that as the beholder's share rises and participation increases, objectivity diminishes, and with it, literacy. With it, the hegemony of the alphabet. And this is an absolute. You can take that one to the bank. The alphabet is the agency of providing us objectivity and detachment and separation of knower from known. And the moment you begin to close that circle again, you pull the rug out from the way the alphabet operates. The objectivity was at a maximum, or is at a maximum, with the alphabet on the page, the printed page, and it's at a minimum with word processing and multimedia. Now I'm speaking, let me make a distinction right now between literacy, small l, and capital L. Capital L is always the phonetic alphabet, and small l is all others, everything else. And there is a watershed of difference between the two. Since we mentioned an experiment that I did some time ago, I'll just bring it in here at this and bring it to your attention, because I talked about the alphabet on the page and on the screen as being two different things. Many years ago, we conceived one differences experiment to contrast television and film. And that was to show a film on a screen and position viewers on each side. So some were on the back of the screen and some were on the front of the screen. And those who saw the film reflected from the screen were more or less properly objective. They, in their comments, they talked about the film as an artifact and about the mechanics and the construction of the movie and that sort of thing. Shot angles, soundtrack coordination, editing techniques, all that stuff. And the people who saw the films from the other side of the screen, the TV side as it were, talked about their emotions and their feelings and what they thought of. If there was humor, the people with light coming through the screen at them didn't laugh, and the people on the other side of the screen did, which made a rather interesting experience for observers. In fact, at one point, I'll just mention this, at one point, the last time I ran the experiment at U of T, we had a brain surgeon, Marcel Kinsborn, was on the television side, and he couldn't believe that he was seeing the same movie as folks on the reflected light side, because they were all laughing and nobody in his group was laughing. So he actually got up and tiptoed around the screen to look and make sure that they were watching the same movie. Couldn't believe it. Brain surgeon. He should have known. Oh, well. Richard Lanham has written a lovely book, just published recently, called The Economics of Attention, subtitled Style and Substance in the Age of Information. And basically, it's a book-long meditation on the switch that we made beginning in the 70s from an emphasis on hardware to an emphasis on software and information. So he's talking about the style and substance, and the switch from what he calls stuff, things you can drop on your foot, to fluff, which is style and ornament. Richard Lanham is a rhetorician par excellence, probably the premier rhetorician alive today. And so what he has to say about rhetoric is very much worth paying attention to. Digital technology, he writes, takes us back to the old, the pre-scientific and pre-industrial economics of attention that in fact prevailed in the medieval university. Figure and ground, stuff and what we think about stuff, reverse again on the digital screen. That reversal, the return of an economics of attention, constitutes the fundamental change brought about by digital technology. The practical arts, so-called, are no longer so practical. The ornamental arts that allocate attention, the arts and letters, the law of intellectual property, these sorts of things, have now taken center stage. Normally, the debate about attention as a scarce resort hinges on discussions of what you attend to in a field of possibilities. As information levels rise, this attention flips to how you pay attention. That's much more important. That is, it flips from concepts and ideas to percepts and perception and sensibility. Freedom, we hear a lot about freedom to choose and so on. Freedom is smothered by plenitude. It's one thing to have freedom of choice when there are comparatively few. It's another when you have thousands and thousands and thousands of choices. You reach a sort of numbness from having too many choices. At that point, the only way out of that morass is training of sensibility. Training of perception or critical awareness as a tool for navigating a field of information. If you don't have time to read each item, then you have to deal with it as another, in another way, as patterns. Training of perception is also an absolutely essential tool for decoding all of the literacies. Participation is beginning to invade every facet of our private and communal lives, and it's worth spending a few weeks just keeping this one on the back burner and taking stock of all the various ways in which you are provided or denied participation. Advertisers now get leads directly from their TV spots with the viewer's consent. Viewers are given choices now about the way the ad is presented to them. And so the advertisers, of course, watch these choices and use them to help construe better ads. In the information economy, as Lanham properly points out, attention is the premium. On the Internet, wealth is counted in eyeballs, as you probably know. advertisers, when they know very well that people are deluged and inundated by ads and other information. They know very well that one of your biggest responses to this situation is simply turn off. And so they construe ads that work when you ignore them. It isn't that hard. Put an ad on the air, run it 5 or 6 times, and then next time it goes by, people will ignore it. Fine, now they got you. As long as you're paying attention, they can't get away with anything. But the minute you ignore them, they can do whatever they like, and they do. Interactivity. It used to be called the dithyrambic spectator, and it's come back. Bruce will recognize that as a title of one of Wyndham Lewis's books. I'm looking at some notes about facade and interdisciplinary and interactive video game, which is part video game, part novel. They plunge you in medias res, toss you into a battle zone, and let you figure out what to do. You play, in this video game, a character known as yourself. Use your name and your character and your personality and pitch it in. But this is very far from reading a novel, isn't it? Let's move on to the idea of literacies themselves. In Explorations 7 in the 50s, about 1957 or 8, there was a little article printed called The New Languages, and it began with this sentence, "New media are new languages, their grammars as yet unknown." One basis for comparative literacies. The grammar and the syntax of the media. Well, the syntax isn't hard, but the grammar isn't easy. The grammars are now what we call literacies. Rather than beginning with, as many people would, with defining what I mean by literacy now, I'm not going to do that. I think it's premature. What I will try and do is list a few of the kinds of literacy or things that people are calling literacies and have been for some time. And then let's see what they have in common and what sort of patterns emerge from that. So here are a few in no special order. Literacies. Augury. That got some attention. And yet it is. It's reading. Maybe rather strange to our sensibilities and our ideas, but it's a kind of literacy and was often called one. Here's another, lip reading. That's a little closer, isn't it, to what we think. Lip reading, letter reading, alphabet reading, syllabary reading, although face reading. Chinese have a very well-established art of face reading. And palmistry, I suppose. I'm not blaming that one on the Chinese, but reading palms, reading tea leaves. Some of these are a little dodgy, but they are all kinds of reading and literacy, and it behoves us to pay attention. Body language has been a literacy, what, since the 50s? Certainly since film began to throw the light on movement, just bare movement. Symptomology in the medical field. The body as a book. And read the symptoms. Tell me what's wrong. The hunter reads sign. And the tracker. These are literacy as well. In a different book, the book of the world, the book of nature. The detective and the CSI read the situation. Then there's media literacy. As I said, new media are new languages. And we're just beginning, broadly, to learn how to read them. There is cultural literacy. That book by Hirsch tried to blow the whistle on cultural literacy and what was going on. He went in search for cultural archetypes, and what he found instead is rather amusing. He found a mess of cultural cliches. And out of those, he composed a kind of encyclopedia and stuck it at the back of the book, 5,000 entries. That every school kid ought to know, sort of thing. but cultural literacy is a little more than facts and history, figure and a bit of narrative, as cultural anthropologists know. And they read cultures, and very deeply. How about reading an X-ray? Now you might say, wait a minute, is this literacy? What's this got to do? But reading an X-ray takes very close attention, close observation, and a lot of training and sophistication and discernment. Reading aloud, reading silently are two literacies, as I've mentioned, and speed reading gives you actually another kind of encounter with the information in a book sufficiently distinct to qualify as a separate literacy, or even a group of them, because at various plateaus in those speeds, different kinds or levels of understanding are presented to the imagination. At the higher speeds, you wind up, as it were, thinking along with the writer. It's quite an experience. In fact, I would suggest that each new posture of the senses or the imagination constitutes a literacy. Let's open it right up. Truman Capote said of someone else, another author, said, that's not writing, that's typing. Rather scornfully. But he pointed at that point, at that moment, to the fact that typewriter prose is different from handwritten prose, and it is. Characteristically, quite different. Just as discernibly different then as, say, word processing is different from handwritten prose. And it's quite easy to tell that difference today. But when Capote said, that's typing, I think this is perhaps the first observation of a different literacy. E-literature, the new electronic lit, is, well, it's a new literacy, multimedia literacy, it's computer, a form of alphabetic literacy on the computer, or of narrative literacy that doesn't use narrative. It's often presented as a kind of sandbox, in which the viewer is invited to play, and to discover various possibilities, different worlds of the imagination. Numeracy is also a literacy, the ability to work with numbers. And it came to our attention 15, 20 years ago when people started complaining about innumeracy. Teachers were suddenly saying, hold it, there's a new bunch of kids in these classrooms, and they don't have any kind of grasp or hold on numbers. Just can't seem to get it. How do you integrate, writes one fellow in a book called Innumeracy, how do you integrate your projects with local, national, and international events? With historical, biological, geological, and astronomical timescales, without number. People too firmly rooted to the center of their lives find such questions uncongenial at best, quite distasteful at worst. It says, numeracy calls for an outer directedness. And if you're all wrapped up in your being wrapped up in yourself, if you're all involved in your audience involvement in things in which you participate, then these left-brain skills that call for detachment, like numeracy and objectivity, are beyond you, and they will remain that way. I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm just saying watch. There's a change in the wind. Numbers and science have appeal for these people only if they're tied to them personally. Getting such people interested in a numerical or scientific fact for its own sake, or because it's intriguing or beautiful, is almost impossible. In other words, excessive concern with oneself makes it very difficult to see this, and it can lead to depression as well as innumeracy. Detachment is called for. Okay, another literacy. Here's a little newspaper article about people who used classical music in a mall to disperse loiterers. You had to know something about music in order to know how to use it that way. Media literacy. One writer, one teacher, defined it this way: having the skills necessary to recognize, evaluate, and apply the technique of media. Now, and that constitutes the entire approach, but it's quite prevalent in the lower school system. And notice it's all directed towards use. And none of it's directed towards understanding the media. The fish has got its eyes firmly on the worm. Media literacy, the term is rather vague, and it subsumes, I suggest, a few of these things. Computer literacy, film literacy, these are old terms. Television literacy, radio literacy. Now we have internet literacy, cell phone literacy, photographic literacy. But then also consider music literacy. I don't mean just that little item I mentioned a moment ago, but generally speaking. Or arts literacy, I've seen the term used. And critical literacies, plural. That is, I suppose, indicates an ability to engage different modes of criticism, depending on circumstance. All of the arts, I derive from this, all of the arts and all of the sciences actually constitute individual literacies. All of the other, in fact, all of the above kinds of literacy I talked about earlier, a moment ago, the CSI and the tracker and so on, all of these could be viewed under the arts and sciences as a general heading. Every single one of them would fit into the arts and sciences. Now that's interesting. The range of texts available to students, this is another teacher writing, Jason Oler, spans not only literary genres and cultures, but non-print media forms as well. Students need to be able to read in quotes, TV programming, digital stories, online discussions, and other kinds of media collages that consume much of the bandwidth in their ecosystem. Having students blend reading the classics in print with experiencing more contemporary works in new media ideally situates them to be literate in the most useful contemporary sense. It's a lovely thought, but the writer doesn't realize that there's a world of difference between the classics and the contemporary media in the sensibilities that are involved. The rapid kaleidoscope of new media in the last 10 years has produced a rapid shift in styles and forms of awareness. And this supplies a ground for the need to study forms of knowing, that is, literacies, and multimedia as compound literacies. If, as sometimes we read, internet companies spend 75% of their money on marketing, this only makes sense in a world where hardware has given away or given way to software and style. It should not surprise us that the dominant discipline, the economics that matters in this new theater, is design. Design is a literacy. A wealth of information creates poverty of attention. The more we're deluged with information, the more we notice the different ways it comes to us, the more we have, in self-defense, to become connoisseurs of it. Literacy, in a new key.